Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. This is Dr. Youngblood. You're tuned in to another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues. We're going to be talking about a very controversial subject today, a subject that multitudes perhaps have not considered and or would say offhand that it's an impossibility. But in a moment, we will discuss that. But in the meantime, let me remind you that we have worship services on Sunday morning and Sunday evening at First Conservative Baptist Church. You're invited to worship with us 10:45 on Sunday morning and 7 p.m. on Sunday evening. 9:30 on Sunday morning is the Sunday morning Bible study hour, Sunday school for all age groups. We'd love to have you come and participate with us. We've had the privilege of meeting you on the air. We'd love to meet you in person. So let me invite you to come and worship with us at First Conservative Baptist Church. We're located 1 mile south of I-295, right in the heart of Mandarin, here on Old San Augustine Road, 12021 Old San Augustine Road, easy to find, 1 mile south of 295. Invite you to come and join us even this Sunday morning. We're looking at study verse by verse and chapter by chapter in the book of Ecclesiastes. I believe that it'd be a blessing for you and a challenge for our lives. Ecclesiastes is a book that gives a pathway for living, insights, instruction, and direction for our life and living. So I invite you to come and worship with us. And let me remind you, when we study issues, when we look at and talk about issues, we do so based on the authority of Scripture. It's a fascinating thing to me that so many in life today will try to resolve and handle difficulties in life's problems, life's issues, simply by walking through it step by step in human wisdom. Scripture is very clear that we lean not on our own understanding, but in all of our ways acknowledging the Lord, and He'll direct our path. And so when we talk about issues, we do so based on the authority of Scripture. Jesus said in His Word to His disciples, "If you continue in My Word, then you're My disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And then in John 17:17, Jesus directly and explicitly and de facto says, "Thy word is truth." And so when we're looking for truth, when we're looking for resolution of issues, we go to the written, revealed, inspired, infallible, inerrant word of God. Ladies and gentlemen, the question that I want to pose for you as our listeners today is a question that is perhaps not recognized in society, and perhaps you have never considered. I've talked about it a number of times, but a little different fashion I want us to consider it today. We have across America in different categories, state, local, and national elections, and this is an election year. The 28th of this month will be our primary in the state of Florida. They've had primaries already in several states, and the primaries intensify and leads into the general election November the 6th. But we've got about 100 Muslims running for office today in America, Islamics. And now perhaps you say, well, what is wrong with that? I'll talk about it in a moment. In an elongated monologue, I want us to be challenged in relationship to this subject. So the question is, should America allow Muslims to seek office? And perhaps it's a question that begs to be answered, and at the same time, we already have the answer because we've gone too far into the rat's trap to try to turn around and get out in our nation today. But ladies and gentlemen, Australia will allow Muslims to immigrate, to come into their country, legally, not talking about illegal immigrants, but legally, but a Muslim is not allowed to hold political office in Australia. Poland will not allow Islamics to immigrate at all to their country. Could they have the right answer? Could they have this issue all right and America has it all wrong? You see, just yesterday there was the primary in Michigan, and there within the primary race for governor was Mohammed El Sayed. Mohammed El Sayed had the basic millennials in Michigan eating out of his hand. Here's an article that says, Mohammed El Sayed has played his hand very well to his constituents in Michigan. Many have fallen under his spell, and many are just part of his plan, working very hard for the final solution. And of course, meaning the final solution is the Islamic takeover in America. You'll hear me say this again during the course of this monologue and into the broadcast, but ones that are talking about our future in America, those that are the prognosticators as to where we're going as a nation, those that are studying the population movements and trends, tell us that by 2050, America will be controlled by Islam. This article talking about Mohammed El Sayed says, let me just give you a few little bullet points about him. By the way, he got 30.2% of the vote in the primary yesterday. 30.2%, 330,865 votes. That's very dangerous. He has his core Muslims siding with him only because he's a Muslim, no other qualification. He has the millennials jumping up and down for him, hanging on to every word, smiling, as this article says, hoping that he'll pick them to stand in the front of the cameras with him. He has the Marxist, socialist, liberal, Islamic ideal on the left wing, and every opportunity he is showing support for anything that we call antithetical to a constitutional republic. He's also a co-conspirator in a clearly defined court case, standing with him in support in some of the cases as identified as de facto campaign manager. He's known as the unindicted co-conspirator in some of those cases. His platform and his Sharia-compliant beliefs collide. When pressed for an answer, he has none to say. Of course, most people do not realize that in Islam, they have the right to lie, to deceive, to get you to side with them and to believe them. He's anti-Israel. He supports the stand for Islamization of Gaza and all other parts of the Middle East. His hardcore Muslim Brotherhood history and background are never questioned by the media in Michigan, and I can't understand that. I just, you know, with the fake, false, phony media, I understand exactly what they're saying there. But you say, woe is me. Looks like they would talk about some of these fundamentals in relationship to his beliefs. But that's not happening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the reason it's so important for us to recognize the demographers are telling us that one day we're going to be controlled by that fact. Let's ask a few questions and answer some of these very serious questions in relationship to the question at hand. Should America allow Muslims to seek political office? Ladies and gentlemen, you can jump in this dialogue and discussion at any point in time you want to. You can dial 401-1413, 904-401-1413. Jump in at any point that you'd like to do so. But ladies and gentlemen, the question must be asked, can a Muslim follow or honor the Constitution? The answer is no. If he follows the Quran, and he does, the Constitution is antithetical to anything that's called a constitutional republic. Another question, are the U.S. laws and the Constitution compatible with the Quran? No, because an Islamic is going to obey the Quran and not the Constitution. What about Islam and tolerance? There's no such thing as tolerance in the ideology of Islam. You see, ladies and gentlemen, there's 114 surahs in the Quran, 6,200 verses, 80,000 words, 330,000 letters. It was first printed in Arabic in Rome in 1530. It is not chronological, and 87% of that book, which is a demonic book, is ideology and political. Only 13% would be considered false religion, or religion, as some would call it. But ladies and gentlemen, may I remind us, Muslims will not stand for the Constitution. They'll not stand for U.S. law. They'll not stand for the U.S. flag. U.S. history is un-American to them as far as they're concerned. What about women's rights in Islam? Islam has, women have no rights. In fact, under Islamic Sharia law, it is considered that a woman has one-fifth of a right of a man, one-fifth the right of a man. If Islamics are required to obey the Quran, can they also obey the law? No, it's an impossibility. In fact, in Surah 6, 114 and 1 to 116, only Allah is to be trusted, not the Bible, not the U.S. Constitution. What about taqiyya, as it is called? Taqiyya is simply an Arabic word meaning authority to deceive. Islamic lies, agreeing to honor the U.S. laws, agreeing to honor the U.S. Constitution, yet never intending to do so. And ladies and gentlemen, they're given that authority in their demonic book that's called the Quran. When do Muslims rise up and take control of a nation or state? When they have 3 to 6%. And ladies and gentlemen, the Pew Research poll, Pew Research says between 2 and 3 million Muslims in America. Well, I think that is low. In fact, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, say they got between 6 and 8 million Muslims in America. And ladies and gentlemen, I can go back to the historic roots of Islam and prove to you when an Islamic group reaches 3 to 6% in a city, a state, or a nation, they rise up and take control. They demand control. In fact, when it gets to that point within the realm of Islam, they start demanding special what is called halal food, that is Islamically called clean food in the school system. They're doing that in America today. There's a major problem in our nation today when somehow, some way, there's a mindset that we can tolerate it and let them run for office. Back in 2003, 4, 5, and 6, the Council on American Islamic Relations website with the leader heading it up out of Tampa, Florida, had on the website encouraging Muslims to run for any political office that you can run for, and I quote, even if it's dog catcher, so that you can be elected, be on the inside of the system to control the system. Ladies and gentlemen, Islam is not tolerant. Christians, Jews are not allowed to build synagogues and churches and temples in Islamic nations. Christians and Jews are not allowed to pray and read their sacred book out loud at homes or in the churches in Islamic countries. Christians and Jews are not allowed to print their religious books or sell them in public places in Islamic nations. And I could go on and on and on with what is found in the realm of Islam. And yet somehow, some way, there's a mindset if they come to America that they should have the right to run for public office. I am on the side of the Australians. They ought not to be allowed to run for public office in America. We have a major danger that is looming on the horizon as they rise up and take control. You say, well, you sound like you're alarmed by it. I am. I'm concerned by the devolution of America, the destruction and the dilution of our constitutional republic, and as a result of what we're finding with this group coming into our nation, it is turning us into Europe very rapidly. May I remind us, ladies and gentlemen, the Islamic invaders will not assemble with others in America, nor in any other country, or any other nation. In the UK, for example, the major Islamic sections have a no-go zone. Listen, I don't know if you've considered this. I've studied it. I'm familiar with it. I know what I'm talking about. You can go into the European Union, especially in the UK, and you can find entire portions of cities that's called the no-go zones, where not even police officers can go into it. They have streets with names in Arabic that you don't understand. Women are dressed from head to toe, and you cannot identify them. In London and other parts of the UK, the Muslims have their own courts. It is the Sharia courts, where they do not adhere to law of the land. And in fact, one of the problems that we're finding today, the reason it's so alarming, when you think about how close the Islamic man came in Michigan in the primary just yesterday, 330,685 votes, 30.2% of the electorate voted for him. And to understand that even in Michigan, they've already started to allowing the Sharia courts. That is a court system set up on the basis, not based on U.S. law, not based on the Constitution, not based on state law, but based on the Quran, what the Quran say. In fact, not too many years back, a couple, two, 3 years ago, a case made headlines when a man had been beating his wife. He was taken to domestic court. and the judge ruled in favor of the man for beating his wife because, unknown to the populace, the judge had converted to Islam, and he was an Islamic judge. And when the defense lawyer for the man that had been beating his wife said, "Your Honor, he's simply obeying his holy book, the Quran," and read for him the Quranic verses, then the judge ruled in favor of the man. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Sharia law. That is allowing the Sharia law, that is Quranic law, to rule and take precedence over American law. We're talking about the subject. Should America allow Muslims to seek political office? Now, I realize a lot of folks will get their dander up. That's all right. There's some that will be surprised that it's said and would be arrogantly opposed to it. But I'm seeing election cycle after election cycle, and we're in an election cycle this year, and we'll be through 2019, when the elections are taking place for the new presidential election in 2020. So we're in the position where we ought to be recognizing what is taking place on a national level. May I remind us, this is happening all over America today. Back for 3 years in the state of Florida, we attempted to pass ALAC, A-L-A-C. That stands for American Law for American Courts, ALAC. And for 3 years, ALAC was defeated. Why was it defeated? How was it defeated? It was simply because we had the CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a whole division of the Brotherhood, the Egyptian Brotherhood, the Islamic Brotherhood. And as a result of that, those were, if you please, lobbying, the lobbyists of the Islamic Brotherhood, the lobbyists out of CARE, threatened the House and the Senate members. I don't mean that now in an arbitrary, capricious way. They literally threatened them, if they voted for it, what they would do in their districts and how they would come against them. This goes back to illustrate my point. When they reach a certain level of populace and control, they rise up and take control of the legislative process, and that's what we see happening in America today. But for 3 years, the lobbyists threatened and badgered our House and the Senate members in Tallahassee, and many of them were literally bought with their lobbyist monies and their campaigns in order for them to vote against ALAC. We had Republican House members and senators that voted against ALAC. Go back and Google it, search American Laws for American Courts, and see what happened in the state of Florida when that came up 2 or 3 years in a row. May I remind us, ladies and gentlemen, the bill failed each time. And with that, we are looking at the onslaught of what I've said about taking Sharia law, that is Quranic law, and displacing the Constitution and the rule of law in America. Now, in the election cycle, as I said earlier in my earlier statement in my opening monologue, we have about 100 Islamic jihadists running for local, state, and federal offices across America. Keep in mind, Australia will not allow a Muslim to run for office, but America does. There is an Islamic term called hijra, H-I-J-R-A-H, hijra, as it is called Islamically. That is a term that simply means takeover of a nation. It is the takeover of a nation. It is the approach to take a nation in under its control. Here's an article about hijra. This article starts out, "I thought you might give you a better understanding of the insidious act of hijra, that's the takeover of a nation without going to war. Don't think for a moment that America is not a target for that, and that there are no American cities where Islamic and Sharia victories and takeovers have not already occurred. It's time for border control or start planning for a very big goodbye to the American way of life," this writer says. Here's what has already happened in England within the next few years, opening their borders without any control. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. If this does not get our attention, nothing will. The mayor of London is Muslim. The mayor of Birmingham, Muslim. The mayor of Leeds, I'm talking about now in UK. The mayor of Leeds, Muslim. The mayor of Blackburn, Muslim. The mayor of Sheffield, Muslim. The mayor of Oxford, Muslim. The mayor of Luton, Muslim. The mayor of Oldham, Muslim. The mayor of Rochdale, Muslim. May I remind us, all of the following, all of the that I just read and beyond that, was done by just 4 million Muslims out of a population of 66 million people. Listen, notice the numbers. Out of about 66 million in the UK population, 4 million over 3,000 mosques in their country, over 130 Muslim Sharia courts, over 50 Muslim Sharia councils, Muslims only no-go zones across the UK totally. Muslim women, 78% don't work, but on free benefits and housing. Muslim men, 63% don't work and on free benefits and housing. Muslim families, 6 to 8 children per family, and they have free benefits, free housing, and all of the UK schools only serve halal meat, that is clean food, that is no pork, if you will, if you want to be simplistic about it, because Islam will not allow it in the UK schools. And we in the U.S. and Canada can't decide on the immigration policy and what we ought to do as far as the immigrants coming in that's taking over our nation. And when they cross the southern borders, ladies and gentlemen, we're finding multitudes of jihadists coming in. And because of Canada opening its arms and saying that we welcome all immigrants, legal or illegal, Canada now is totally saturated, and it's filtering back through the northern borders with the jihadists coming into America from the northern borders. May I remind us, ladies and gentlemen, we're in serious trouble, and unless we recognize the problem that we're faced with, we do nothing about it, we sit back in silence, we're going to watch the continuing Islamic invasion. In fact, that's the title of a book that I published several years ago, The Coming Global Islamic Invasion. And one of the books that I'd suggest you read is that book, The Coming Global Islamic Invasion. And a second book that I'd recommend to you, not just because I'm the author of it, had the privilege of researching for years and the production and the publishing of it, is Islam Tolerant. Is Islam Tolerant? Ladies and gentlemen, one of the problems that you find in Islam is the refusal to assimilate. Refusal to assimilate. This is the reason they have the ghettos that they're called in London and other parts of the UK, because that is the no-go zones where it's made up of Islamics coming in, refusing to assimilate. And in Europe, the overwhelming majority of the Islamics that's coming in by the Islamic invasion, they are on the dole. That is, the taxpayers in the UK are paying for them to the Islamics to come in to sit and to make bombs and to prepare and to study a way to take over the nation completely. And they're being paid, they're being provided education, health care, place to live, food to eat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're literally leeches on society. But listen to this coming from the Quran itself. Surah, we call them chapters, Surah 551. O you who believe, speaking of the Muslim, take not the Jew and the Christian for friends. Surah 580. No Muslim who befriends an unbeliever will abide in hell. Those Muslims who befriend unbelievers, that's non-Muslims, will abide in hell. Surah 328. Let not the believer, that is the Muslim, take disbelievers, non-Muslims, for friends or helpers. Surah 3118. O you who believe, speaking to the Muslim, take not as your friends, helpers, advisors, consultants, protectors, those outside your religion, that is the pagans, the Jews, the Christians, and the hypocrites, since they will fail you and corrupt you, the surah says. Surah 9:23, O you who believe, take not as your supporters and helpers your fathers and your brothers if they prefer disbelief to belief, that is, if they're not Islamic. And whosoever does, so then he is one of the wrongdoers. Under Islamic Sharia law, the Muslim is considered a wrongdoer, an evil worker, if he makes even a friend out of a Jew or a Christian, a non-believer. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize the invasion that is taking place. Here's an article about the Christian Action Network in 2017, revealed the indoctrination of the Islamic indoctrination program called Access Islam by the U.S. Department of Education to public schools, when no similar material for Christianity, Judaism, or Hinduism even existed. The largest classroom for teaching these educational resources to schools and libraries, replacing the term religion of peace with empire of faith, is PBS, Public Broadcasting Network. This is sad, but this article says the social studies lesson plan for grades 5 through 12 begins with the five pillars of Islam, and it teaches Islam in those five pillars. Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you've never heard that statement before, but I'll just very briefly, time will not allow me to go into great detail, but suffice it to say, the five pillars of Islam are being taught in our public school systems today. It is being found in Florida. It's being found in Maryland. It is found in some of the public schools in New York and other states across America, where the five pillars of Islam are being taught as subjects in the public school system paid for by, yes, taxpayers paying our tax money for the public school system. Under the first pillar, at the pillar of faith, students learn to the Islamic calligraphy and memorize the Shahada. That Shahada is simply the proclamation of faith and fidelity to Islam. Despite their family's belief, they're required then to stand and repeat the Shahada. That is the call to faith. When you pronounce or speak publicly the Shahada, you've literally, under Islamic law, it is your proclamation to your conversion to Islam. The second pillar of faith is prayer. It's important, the word sound, movements and directions and the frequency. And this stage does not reveal the violent Islamic verses called for in the jihad, that is, warfare against non-Muslims. And yet, students in our public school system are required to stand and repeat some of the Islamic prayers. The third pillar is what's called zakat, that is, almsgiving. And the videos that are used in our public school system today, produced through the public broadcast system, have questions and answers. And the review to the purpose of, they ask the students, what's the purpose of zakat, that is the almsgiving for the Islamics? And it's to donate to charities, they say. And it's made to look like it is wonderful and good, but it's indoctrination of Islamic belief. The fourth pillar is the fasting and brings discussion for the classroom about the month-long holiday called Ramadan. Ladies and gentlemen, most are not aware of the fact that during the month of Ramadan, more people are slaughtered and murdered across the world during the month of so-called Ramadan than any other time of the Islamic calendar. The students are taught Ramadan and how it is mandated by Islam and it's good under the Islamic view, and it's taught in the classrooms. The fifth pillar of Islam is the compulsory pilgrimage to do a Hajj, that is a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Mecca and to go there to Mecca, and the students are taught what Mecca is and how wonderful it is for the Islamics to do so. But the sixth pillar that's not listed as one of the pillars of faith in Islam, but is in fact a pillar of faith for them, and that is jihad. And that is to slay, to murder, to kill, to destroy the infidel. That is all non-Muslims. That is their goal. But ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how to emphasize it any more vehemently than to say we're making a mistake in America when we allow the Islamics to run for office and put them in positions of power, and put it, especially when we find this taking place in the classroom. It is a silent jihad in the classroom. It's educational jihad. And across America today, countless schools and public school systems are being brainwashed. The students, our unsuspecting, unassuming, unaware students, they're being brainwashed about the religion of Muhammad and Islam. It is taught as being good, and at the same time, Christianity and Judaism is rarely ever presented, and if it is, it's always presented in a bad light. Ladies and gentlemen, in Florida, students are being taught to design and create Muslim prayer rugs. In Maryland, students are being taught to write the Shahada, which says, there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. The prophet Allah is the only messenger of Muhammad. New York, students are promoting in the educational jihad videos for teachers to use in the classroom called, the title of the video, by the way, is Call to Be Dying Martyrs. And it talks about Islamics being killed and being martyrs. The video interviews Islamic terrorists who tell students about their attacks and how their jihadist attacks are justified in the Quran. I can't emphasize enough, ladies and gentlemen, the need for us to recognize the danger that is from within. And as we recognize that, we need to look up, lift up our heads, for our redemption draweth nigh, Luke 21:28 tells us. We're in the last of the last days, and we need to speak up, stand up, and stop shutting up and going into closet. We need to be salt and light, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you on there even tomorrow as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.